There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Hey, I'm Casey.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
Man, Tyler, it feels like old times. You know why?
Are you assuming my gender?
Don't know. I will, though. I will assume that. we're truck casting.
Yeah, we are.
And it feels good.
Yeah, finally.
Finally.
Hang on. It's been a while.
I know. We've been sitting in back rooms and doing all kinds of stuff and casting, but today we're truck casting. We're actually going to go film something a little bit outside of the deer woods. Tentatively, this is your... Now, I don't believe in jinxes.
No.
Okay. This is your last wedding.
Is that like a Bigfoot?
A jinx?
What's a jinx, yeah?
It's like a lynx, but with a J.
Okay, I got you. It's like a big cat. It's black, probably.
Yeah, it would. A jinx would be a black lynx.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a cross between a jaguar and lynx.
This is probably my last wedding, but I bet you it's probably not.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the last one I have booked. It's the last one I really want to do, but there's a good chance that I feel like I have to do one at some point because it's nice to do something that actually makes money that I put a lot of work into.
Yeah.
Which has just not been the case through most of my life. But well, the element is getting busy enough for me that I am trying to really just focus down on the element stuff and not have this whole other you know, looming editing project and this and that kind of take away from my time where we can get content out more rapidly.
Well, I'm going to go help you with this one, but I'm not really a wedding videographer per se. I've done some videography stuff, you know, of course, with the whitetail and all this hunting we do. So Tyler has specifically instructed me to not open my mouth so they don't really realize how much of a redneck I am. But
this is your first and my last.
There we go, dude. What up? It's not totally true.
Oh.
I was a groomsman at a wedding and was responsible for the GoPro that was I was there bedding. Oh, I keep saying bedding. What a goofball.
Bedding videographer.
The Germans.
What are you thinking?
Oh, man. It's like a recessive gene just came out.
Recessive. But,
today, we wanted to talk a little bit about some of our previous problems. And I think it's very appropriate that we're going to have this discussion and it be your supposed last wedding, because in the past this has been a problem for you in some ways. I guess the problem, and these problems are all going to be related to hunting, right? And the wedding videography got in the way of a lot of hunting, especially 2017 through 2019. Right, and that's really part of the reason why you're trying to ditch the wedding stuff.
Yeah, in Texas, everybody now wants to do an autumn-flavored wedding in October and November.
Because really, it's finally tolerable to go outside.
That's right. It's literally, it's crazy, but like I get more inquiries for the first part of November than I do any of the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. Seriously. And I don't know. There's just something about, I guess, what people are seeing the weather behave like in early November. I guess it's a fairly consistent, finally cooled off, like you said.
It's usually dry, too.
Raging cold fronts, yeah. You know, or whatever. And yeah. So, yeah, like, that's the time. And I've gotten to where the last 2 years, especially, I have just said, sorry, we're unavailable every time I get a October or November wedding request. So, I mean, I'm literally probably missing out on, you know, 80% of my business or whatever. But, like I said, it's busy enough around here at the Element, and things are on the up and up that we have been blessed to be able to kind of slow that down and go do some more hunting instead.
Yeah, so. Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about it. And I guess one of the reasons that you originally did wedding videography is because it was a good way to multi-purpose the equipment that you'd use for filming hunts and stuff.
Justify the equipment, really. I mean, like, when I started doing this, some of you guys that listen may have heard Anthony Warren on here several times. A good friend of mine.
You saw him shoot a dick in South Dakota.
That's right.
In Nebraska a couple years back.
So, Anthony and I started, we met in about 2012 maybe, and we had started doing, it was the same deal as you and me, Tinder pretty much is where we met.
Yeah.
And no, it was online though, and he was interested in doing some higher production value stuff, you know, and so, and in the outdoor space and kind of getting into that.
I have forgot I knew that, but probably had told me before. Did y'all, what avenue? Texas Bow Hunter or something?
No,
or what did y'all?
Craigslist, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of odd.
Y'all actually put out personal ads or like what?
I put out an ad, yeah, that was just a personal ad saying, hey, I'm looking to kind of start a higher production value kind of outdoor show, digital media thing or whatever. I can't remember how I worded it exactly, but, you know, he calls me. And first time I met him, he was just a young pup, and I was too, but, you know, newly married, didn't have any money, you know, and I didn't have any money either. And we're just sitting here like, you know, I kind of like this guy, but I can tell, like, they pull up in a car that's like, junker, you know what I mean? And I'm like, oh man, we don't, you know, you kind of hope that when you reach out and you're a poor guy, that when you reach out to somebody like that, they show up in like a jacked up F-250 or whatever, and you know, it's like, oh, his dad for sure has money, you know?
Yeah, we get new cameras today.
Yep. So that wasn't the case. So we had a kind of a, you know, we had to bank on having good content and just having a creative eye. And so he actually learned. He wanted to learn from me, and I had done some of this in the past, even before 2012. And so I, you know, I'm not saying I was great at it, but I had an idea of what was going on. I showed him my camera. We did some video stuff around my band, and just kind of let him learn the camera. And next thing you know, he actually buys better equipment than I have. So then I have to, of course, up the ante. And then for literally like a couple of years, he and I talked multiple times a day. Just he would get an idea and he'd be like, dude, what do you think about if we did this and this, and we're trying to figure out how to get a Red cinema camera and like all these different things, you know, like we're just talking all day long about how we can make this stuff work, you know. And so eventually we had, you know, we tried to make our gear you know, feasible. The Red camera never happened, but some higher productions gear did. And basically, the only way we were able to do that, because nobody wanted to pay us in the outdoor space, was through wedding films. We said, okay, well, if we do wedding videos, we can put all that money, that'll be side job, we'll put all that money into camera gear. So we went, pulled out a loan, started doing some weddings, bought us a nice camera, and went to town. We did that. We got that FS700, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, that's how we justified what we were wanting to do in the outdoor space. And then we just started really trying to, we did some sick time lapses, really high production value stuff. And, you know, you and I have since realized that stuff is awesome, but, you know, you go and shoot a whole season worth and get one film out of it. It's hard to, make the, you know, pay the bills, I guess. Yeah, you know, so there's a fine line.
The YouTube format, which is about the only way to do this thing nowadays, that's, you just can't do that. You know, I guess if you were going to, we actually did the math on this the other day, guys, just kind of to make sure that we are doing things smart and right. And it takes hundreds of thousands of dollars in advertising revenue to pay and also give yourself a salary to have a spot on even the lower level outdoor TV channels. Mm-hmm. So it's just not really feasible for some guys from East Texas, especially whenever it's just not that much fun either. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Like, well, you know, and that TV, you know, for those who don't know, I'm going to be a little bit clear here, hopefully, and a little see-through. But for those who don't know, the TV thing, like, those dudes are more than anybody just at the mercy of these big sponsor dollars, you know. And it's not like that necessarily it's big dollars. Some of it is, some of it's not. But either way, they're big companies a lot of times, because the big conglomerate companies in the hunting industry want to spend money at TV because that's what's worked in the past. They have, you know, proven numbers to show that this is working, and they have decent money to throw out there, right? So
yeah,
they end up pretty much also because they're a conglomerate and everything has to be done a specific way. And like, you know, Joe wants it done because Joe has always been in this industry doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
Like these guys end up, they in outdoor TV, and I think people have seen this and know what I'm talking about. They literally can't post a post without it being some kind of promotion for a company.
In this world, it's called deliverables. Mm-hmm. If y'all don't know that, and in any deal that you do, you have deliverables, whether you're a contractor or whatever, it's the things you're supposed to deliver, right? But like for, you know, the outdoor stuff, it's going to be like the things that you're supposed to give back in return. And it just seems like the deliverables for outdoor TV are astronomical. Mm-hmm. Like those guys have got to do, guys and gals, you know, say guys. You
it
know
seems
what
like it. I don't, we hadn't done that, so we don't know. No, but it's like, if you look at the way they're doing it, man,
yes,
you know.
But they're probably getting paid for it too. It's not like, especially like the big dogs, like Lee and Tiff and them. Like,
sure,
they ain't doing a Golden Estrus commercial for nothing. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But at the same time, what we do gives us so much more liberty to just be ourselves. And that's what we're really after. You know, Tyler and I both, when we decided we wanted to try to push to do this for a living, we decided that we wanted to, you know, do something we enjoyed doing. If not, I would just continue to do construction, you know, because it pays better. You know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, that's not what this podcast is about. We were trying to get to talking about camera equipment with that.
So, basically what has happened is we have turned this thing into what we do now, which is producing more content than just a single season, you know, 30-minute, just high production film. But what we still want to bring the highest value of production we can. We want people to go, man, those are cool shots. Those are creative. Those are good thoughts, man. This is not boring. You know, like, these are things that we want to create because we obviously want people to view it, but also we want to be proud of this work too. And so that brings us kind of to the point here. We've had these persistent previous problems or whatever.
Ooh,
this
persistent.
Is called.
I love the consonants.
There are some things that we're going to be trying to fix this year and trying to get better at, and we're going to talk about those things in this podcast. And we're going to start with camera gear, and this may not interest everybody because not everybody wants to sell film. Not everybody, you know, even cares at all about the filming stuff. We're going to talk about that. We're going to go into gear a little bit, and we're going to talk about some more theoretical, practical, you know,
strategy stuff.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
But with the camera stuff, you know, with all that has been said so far, you know, basically what we struggled with last year, in the last few years are a couple of several different things, in case you can clean up after me here. But basically we noticed that in 2019, especially, Casey and I were having so many good encounters with deer, but it was all self-film stuff because it was just me and him still, and there was no way to really bring anybody on board.
Or it was just you and I, and we're both trying to play half hunter, half cameraman.
Yeah. But, like, we also realized that if two guys are hunting, there's a better chance that one of us gets a shot at a deer, and we kind of both like shooting deer, and it also makes for a cool video too, right?
Yeah.
So we start like going out into the field you know, separate, but also like in the middle of the day, we're trying to help capture, you know, what's going on, and we're making these moves and stuff. And it just is like when you've got two storylines going with two hunters, and then we're meeting up in the middle of the day, you're like, how do you put all this together and make a story, you know, even if it's just a day-long story? Like, how does the story get told very well with two guys trying to tell two different stories, but they're together at the same time sometimes, and sometimes they're not, right? So basically, we thought one of the big things we needed for 2020 was a camera guy. Mm-hmm. And so we found a way to do, like, kind of the intern thing. We had a lot of inquiries. We appreciate those if you're one of those people. And we ended up deciding on a guy that helped us out up until Illinois.
I think it was about November.
We were still chatting with him in November, but things just kind of became a struggle because it's an internship deal, right? So, like, you know, I know there are paid internships out there, but this was one of those deals where we're like, dude, we're going to try so hard to get you paid sometime in the near future, but we can't do it this fall. You know, it may happen even in the new year. We don't know. So, you know, like I said, I'm being transparent here, but the it just got stressful for him, I think, not being able to have a whole lot of money and us not having a whole lot of money to help him out with.
I understand that, too, especially when you're 20, you have parental pressure and things like that as well. And then also when you're 20, sometimes you just don't have things quite figured out, too, so that makes things tough. You know, I didn't either. But and it's not that we didn't feed him or anything. You know, we took good care of him when we could, but just, you know, it never was like, here is $1,000 for your, you know, your help.
Here's
you
a little bonus, you
but
know.
But that's, you know, that's how it is up front. And appreciate his efforts and stuff last year.
Yes,
but
it helped. You know, yeah, there was we were able to capture the dynamic that KC and I have that you hear on the podcast in a video form several times, you know.
Yeah.
But
made South Dakota really cool.
It did. It made Nebraska pretty cool. It made South Dakota pretty cool. Just having a camera guy, that is. And so, anyway, what we decided was whenever he left, or you kind of decided that he just couldn't really pull it off, we decided, well, we need that. You know, we still need that. So how do we find that? We did the whole thing again, kind of opened up to the audience, and a lot of inquiries again. And we came across two guys that we've introduced to you on the podcast, and they're going to be awesome, man. I'm so excited about them. And so I think that's one thing that we really have thought production-wise that would be a good thing for us, along with just getting the ability as technology grows to have better camera gear, because we had a lot of issues last year with audio, and we had we wanted the capability, now that we have cameramen, to film high quality shots,
when you're
self-filming and, you know, shooting a deer in self-film fashion, you know, it's not like you're going to be zoomed in real tight and moving as the deer moves and stuff like that anyway. But now we've got these camera guys that are going to help us out. It's like, let's put a bad to the bone camera in their hand and let them do work, you know?
And with that, Tyler and I actually just went and purchased a new camera, new to us, yesterday. We tend to buy almost everything we can use because that's just the way it goes when you are poor. But I should say that completely, because it's an expensive camera, but we view it as a tool, you know. But essentially what we're able to do now is where we started with the wedding videography stuff, and we're talking about, you know, all the camera equipment you purchase and stuff. There's a camera called a FS700 that looks like you were filming 1993 news shows with, you know, like it's almost a big over-the-shoulder type. And that you can run it like that. You know, we've done it. And what it's made for is to get super slow motion, or very slow motion, or very isn't the right way, but it's made to get slow motion and then what's called super slow motion, which is stuff that y'all don't really care too much about. Anyways, the cool shots of, like, arrows moving super slow and all that stuff. Or if you watch Rock Trolls, our fly fishing film from 18, which, if you haven't, you need to, because I watch it, like, monthly. It's just super
cool.
That's how we got those shots of those trout eating bugs on top of the water.
Yeah.
Is with that camera. You take that, and then you put a big lens on the front of it, and you really got something special. Well, that's, you know, the technology circa 2015, 16.
Yeah,
now,
it's a bazooka.
Yeah, we call it the bazooka. That's what I was getting at. I forgot to say that. Yeah, it's, you know, over the shoulder, big lens. We actually filmed some stuff in the city park with this thing, and people are looking at us like we were about to blow up the disc golf place, you know? Like, they just, like, don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Well, now, we just went and purchased a A7 S3 from Sony, which I think I said them all right this time.
Yep.
That pretty much gives us almost the same capabilities in a handheld form, which is...
It gives us better capabilities in an FS700.
Well, can we do 240?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Then, so we're done.
HD, and there's no 4K on the FS700.
That's right. That's the big deal, because you're actually shooting 720 when you're going super slow, right? Or something like
that? No, you're shooting 1080.
Oh, you're shooting 1080?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's no 4K at all.
Yeah.
Unless you do an upgrade, which you can buy a separate thing that's kind of expensive, or you can just buy a Sony A7S3.
So pretty much completely minus some settings that are different, right? With like the playback deal or whatever, which this is going to nerd out for y'all too much, and it's too much for me. But whenever we're filming those shots of those fish eating, we're just rolling the camera and it's not actually recording, and then you press the button and it just saves everything that was 8 seconds before. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how we do that. This camera doesn't do that. Instead, you're just going to record the whole thing. But we have a super fat SD or CF card that goes in this thing that records a ton of footage. Anyways, but what that translates to, y'all, is that we're going to really step up our shots this year, whether that is the stuff we're filming in the off season or the stuff we're filming in season with camera guys, or even this camera. What it does is it allows us, if we're self-filming, to be able to film something in 4K 120, which means really sharp and slow-mo,
super slow,
and be able to do what's called crop. So, like, say the deer's, like, tiny in the frame. You take that thing down to four times the size, and it still looks
HD.
Like, super sharp.
Yeah.
So it's like a self-filmer's dream as well. So
it also gives us the ability to just shoot straight up 4K, which, like, a lot of people out there have 4K TVs, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So whether, I mean, you may or may not do a whole lot of viewing in 4K, but if you do, you're going to be like, this is... Finally, these guys are shooting footage that looks good on my TV, you know?
Planet Earth 2 meets Whitetail, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of the plan with that.
Yeah,
so
we're excited about that. I mean, that's going to be something that hopefully is just... I mean, we're just going to hope to bring you... Like, those slow motion shots also are going to be able to... We're going to really be able to break down, anatomically, where our arrow hits and where it exits and everything else, so that, we can find the deer and make better decisions after we shoot a deer, and B, you can see how that may pertain to you in the future. You know, like, you can see how the shot turned out. You get a really good look at it in super sharp 4K in slow motion. And then in the future, when you hit a deer like that, you can do the same, you know, you can think maybe that's how you should treat that situation or whatever.
Yeah.
So hopefully this stuff is, we're probably a little more hyped than you are, but hopefully you're pretty hyped about it.
Yeah,
too.
And this will kind of be our last camera talk here, but it's something that will affect y'all as well. Anytime you hear us do like a monologue, which is us talking over some music while there's some stuff going on footage-wise, that's actually a mess up most of the time.
Sometimes,
like, when you look at like Nameless and stuff, it wasn't. It was really cool because it was more of a film. But if you see that we do that, It's usually because, and especially in the 2020 year, we had a ton of audio issues. So we would get the footage, but like there would be a problem with the audio connection, or just the camera's broken in general, and or maybe whoever's running the camera isn't. Oh, it's just like that, right?
Yep.
So there's some problem that makes it to where you can't hardly even hear, or the audio is bad, or there's or something like that going, and it's just not worth even putting out there because it's just not enjoyable to watch. So we have since upped the mic situation. We have like some pretty legit microphones, and we're going to probably run some of that stuff that you might see kind of outdoor TV style with like the lapel mics. They call them lav mics.
Yeah.
We're going to do a little bit of that stuff too, so that we get as much crispy audio as we can, because, dude, I love the raw stuff, and I know that monologues are cool, and there's some things that are really cool to be done with that, but at the same time, like, I love just the sound of the woods and stuff. And whenever that's not in there, it's kind of disappointing.
And we had one of those mics. We upgraded one of those mics last year. And, man, it made for some really, really cool audio.
Yeah.
And so we're excited about that. You know, for me, like, some of the things I'm going to work on in regards to camera and filming and stuff are, you know, I killed five bucks last year, and really only one of them was actually, like, you could see an arrow go into a deer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Out of five.
And that hasn't gone out yet, guys. So be ready for that. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two of them I self-filmed, I believe, and then two of them were filmed by our camera guy last year. And one of them, he didn't even have the camera on. The other one, the deer was behind a tree. I didn't know for sure if it was or not. I thought it would be close. He never said anything, and I was just like, there's the shot. Let's just do it. You know?
You kind of.
So it's not like his fault necessarily.
That one wasn't really his fault. The Illinois one, that's pretty tough to deal with, but it's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
But, I think that the South Dakota one, for sure, you were just like, I need to shoot this deer.
day five or whatever. Yeah. I'm ready to do this thing, man.
Yeah.
But that's kind of one of my goals is to, like you're saying, you know, make sure and try to get deer on video a little better. Mm-hmm. You know, last year I had to self-film a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot. Like, the two times that I had a cameraman were, like, the only two times I had a cameraman all year. The only two evenings.
You killed deer both those times.
Yeah. Like, the first time I had Jack film me last year was in South Dakota, and we went in, and an hour and a half later, I shot a deer. Mm-hmm. Same deal in Illinois. We went to Illinois, got in a tree, and an hour and a half later, I shot a deer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I did a lot of self-filming last year. And I think for me, a lot of the things that I see are just, I need to, unless it's just a big one, I'm just not going to worry too much. I'm going to try, but I'm not going to readjust the camera after I go full draw, you know what I mean? So there's that. And then there's also, like, I hunted a ton of days for the deer on my place. And as I kind of got a little bit, I guess you could say, burnt out later in November, and, you know, just, like, not sure if this was actually going to happen, I kind of stopped filming deer as much a little bit in the process. And I wish I'd have done a better job, especially after connecting on November 30th and making it happen. So that's kind of my spiel about the camera stuff, I guess.
I think that I know what you mean about the getting burnt out thing. I personally went, well, I shot a deer in South Dakota that didn't die, but I went one for one self-filming. But if I would have had five or six opportunities like you, there probably would have been a few that I didn't get on film. You know what I mean?
There were some.
Yeah,
I shot some big deer last year, and it was just like, you know what? I'm just gonna kill these things.
Right,
I hadn't shot a whole lot of giant slaying deer or whatever.
We're always like, you know, the shot first.
Yeah.
You know, but the way we look at it, it's like, I'd much rather take a picture of a big dead deer than, like, half footage of a deer running away.
Yeah, I mean, this ain't outdoor TV. We're not we're not, like, under these contracts or whatever. Like, me and KC are trying to have the most fun we can have.
That's right.
So,
and still find a way to, you know, eat bread and cheese from time to time.
Yeah.
But
pimento.
The thing, homemade pimento cheese, dude.
Mm.
The thing that kind of that carries me into is that I was one for one on kill shots, two for two on getting shots on film. However, neither, I'm going to say neither because neither sounds real, real accent-y coming
neither
from
nor
me.
Neither nor neither.
Neither of those were perfect shots. And I feel like I need to work on my shot placement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a list of excuses, but at the same time, everyone does when it's not perfect, right? Self-filming does impede that sometimes, but Tyler and I have noticed that almost every time we draw back, because we run second-angle stuff, right? So there's a GoPro pointing at us most of the time. It feels like you hold for 5 seconds, but it's actually a half second. So there's, like, some slowing down that can be done. But in general, I really need to just think about it a little more when I shoot, because I've noticed that I don't do the pick a hair thing very often.
Yeah.
And I need to start doing that.
Yeah.
I kind of, in my mind, it's not that I black out, but I'm just like, okay, there's vitals there. Think, you know, and I really need to start trying to do the pick a hair thing, I believe.
Dude,
because
when you're self-filming also, like, there's so much going on that your mind just kind of, like when you put the when you see that dot go on the vitals,
oh yeah,
you're just like, oh, it's good, you know, it's 20 yards, right? And no big deal. And it's like the thing is, you're kind of almost in this like, I'm seeing the pen, but I'm seeing the animal, but I'm seeing my camera, and I'm seeing that all out of the same eye. You know what I mean? It's like, holy smokes. Like, really, you're not super focused. Like you said, you're not picking a hair. And that's, like, I did the same thing. If you watch the Texas hunt where I shot the buck on public in Texas, like, you probably can see, like, you can see both, like, in the first shot that I shot at a deer and missed it. In that shot, you can see my bow moving like almost the whole time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, whoa, it's like I'm surprised he squeezed off
right
there.
It never settles really, you know? And so, but then you can see in the deer that I shot, you can see me like focus, man, and take my time. And I could feel it, dude. Like, it's almost just like, it's probably just a second. It's literally like probably a second. But I can almost feel myself just go, like, I'm ready to pull the trigger and go, no. Just deep breath, you know what I mean? Hold hold for a second. Just get steady, you know? And I made a great shot there. And I'm the same way. Like, man, I got to make sure I make no mistakes next year.
Well, I think that I need to work on my thought process of shot placement too. Like, I'm conscious of the vitals and stuff, but like on my Kansas buck, the shot wasn't perfect, but it was absolutely devastating to the deer. It just wasn't a shot that's going to drop him in 40 to 60 yards. He ran about 150, which those big deer up there will do that anyway sometimes. We did a breakdown. What do we call
hunt
it?
Hunt breakdown.
It was like a anatomy, you know,
deal
where we kind of cut him open, and this wasn't on YouTube because they would hate that, but and showed you what happened. And what happened is I hit one lung and liver pretty much and a bunch of arteries. But ideally, like, in retrospect, I would have shot him, like, kind of high in the shoulder because he's at, like, 12 yards or 11 yards and just punched it all down in, like, right through that bone and just hit a bunch of lungs and he'd have dropped soon. But I was like, well, I don't want to crowd the shoulder, you know, yada, yada. But I think that there's, like, just this and part of the problem is we watch people on outdoor TV do it for forever where they're like, I ain't going to crowd that shoulder at all because I'm shooting 390 grains, you know. Like, when you're shooting a pretty heavy arrow setup, like, we're going to shoot the vectors, and I'm going to shoot quite a few different broadheads on them this year, I think, just because I kind of want to mess around with that a little bit. And last year didn't have great blood trails, and you kind of had the same problem. So, anyways, when you're shooting a heavy arrow, you can punch through some stuff. Now, that's sort of true, but in South Dakota, that didn't happen.
That's the weirdest thing.
It was a weird deal. I mean, I'm shooting 536 grains, which, for all intents and purposes, for most people, is a very heavy arrow, and I hit a piece of grass at, like, what? It was, like, probably 6 yards from me. The deer is 20 yards from me, and I don't know if it affected arrow flight or what, but you can tell when you run it, like, frame by frame, that I hit a rib and just got zero penetration. It's a very, very weird deal.
The deer is also going down, which shifts momentum of the arrow to a downward direction as well. So, like, there's a little bit of that. But you're going to have that in pretty much every deer shot.
Yeah. Well, that was from the ground, too, which is a different deal. You know? Whereas, like, if you're shooting down at a deer whenever they're
ducking,
it's
already kind of going down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whereas this buck, like, he's kind of going down and turning.
Yeah.
So it's almost like maybe that rib flattened out and I hit, like, you know, instead of having to go through a quarter inch of bone, I was actually having to go through like 2 inches of bone because of, you know, I kind of hit the rib at a glancing angle or something. I don't know. We didn't recover the deer. He was alive and well the next day. But I think to kind of just bring it back to, I need to make sure that I'm putting my pin not just on vitals but on the right spot for the situation, and that's like the next level shot placement stuff.
Yeah, it's also really hard to do. You know, it's like, because you got seconds usually if you're talking about grunt stop or whatever, and the
that deer was looking right into my soul when I shot
the
him,
whole
so.
Way pretty much, and
he
so
knew I was there.
It's so hard to, because you don't know the angle a lot of times until you've grunt stopped him or whatever. You don't know where his shoulder is and where, if his leg's back or forward or whatever. So, you know, that's that same deal for me. Like, I'm going to be looking at some things I'm going to improve on or try to improve on in my arrow setup, my broadhead setup, my bow.
You want to go just a tiny bit lighter, I think, this year, right?
So one thing I struggle with in that Texas hunt, if you watched it, is I have a really really low end, bottom end rangefinder. And so when you're looking, you know, when it's dark, it's already hard enough because that thing is like, it's worse than looking with your regular eyes, you know, obviously. But like, it's bad, bad. And then you look towards the sun as well, and you got like that gray kind of haze or whatever, and it just, everything's gray. So the rangefinder, I would like to maybe try to get a little bit better rangefinder situation going as well. But
you used to have a little bit better one, but yeah, we lost it in the woods.
I think I found it.
Oh, did you?
I think I found it not too long ago, but it's I started looking at it, I was like, I don't know if it's a whole lot better. It's still like an $80 rangefinder, yeah, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's something I want to improve, and because of my arrow setup last year, I really felt like I had to know a really pretty accurate range because I had such a heavy arrow. And I think I'm going to go a little bit lighter because it's going to flatten out my trajectory a little bit to help me, you know, mainly, you know, like I've said this before, you know, 20 to 24 isn't that big of a difference, but 30 to 36 is a little bit more to deal with. Think that deer's 30 and he's really 36 or 37. That coupled with, I shot 2 inches high, and then also the deer jumped the string. That's, you know, 4-6 inches, whatever it is, and that makes the difference. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm trying to lighten up a little bit without losing too much FOC, and we got Isaac at Vector kind of working on that for us, I think.
Yeah, he's got some really cool thoughts playing around with some spines and stuff like that and some GPI stuff. But you're not talking about going like 400 low.
No.
You're just like, actually, you kind of want to be in that sweet spot that I was a couple years back. That's really pretty good spot, like that 470 to 480 range.
Yeah, 470 was what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's... But another reason is because every single deer I shot pretty much was just straight pass through, sticking in the dirt on the other side. And it's like, man, if that's the way it's going to be, I was killing deer with a light arrow I was not losing any deer with a light arrow, and I wasn't getting hardly any pass throughs. But I was just using a devastating broadhead and shooting deer where they need to be shot, you know? And so I'm thinking if it's passing through every time, I don't necessarily need that to happen. I need to make some devastation happen. I need to make accurate shots, and that's what I'm hoping to do with that setup.
That's true. I mean, this all is like I don't know if you remember this, but like you used to could like create a player on some video games and stuff, and they gave you like 400 XP to work with, but you could distribute it among
if you
like
wanted a fast
eight,
guy, you could make him real fast, but you couldn't make him very strong or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. That's kind of what you're doing with archery equipment. Like, everybody can find a way to kill a deer. I mean, you know, I know a guy who is an archery tech, and he sets his wife up with like a 330 grain arrow, and she kills deer almost every year and hasn't lost one. You know, it's just, I personally have the skills and the strength to not need to do that.
Yeah.
Right? So you and I both are going to do what works best for our own purposes. And it's cool to have that kind of, adjustability or whatever you want to call it with Isaac at Vector to be able to kind of work through some of that stuff.
I'm also probably going to gain a little speed this year.
Yeah.
So that's going to be helpful.
With a newer bow, right?
That's what I'm hoping, you know. I mean, we're the word on the street is the Element has bows heading our way that should be here about the time we get back from vacation here soon.
Ooh, baby.
That's the word on the street. Now, I can't trust everybody I've met, especially if they vote a certain way. No, I'm kidding. But really, I mean, that's what we've heard. We don't know for sure if that's going to happen or if that's actually the case. But if that is the case, I'm going to be shooting a pretty slick bow, fast bow, and it's going to help me out even shooting flatter, you know. So
maybe some slick tricks on the end of that thing,
maybe,
too.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, and I think I'm going to actually probably shoot a mechanical this year. I know there's some people out there just rolling their eyes.
Are you
going to
shoot a mechanical the whole time, or are you going to mess around with it? Or are you just
not
be
during
one
season, I probably won't mess around much. If I'm hunting deer and not elk,
yeah,
I'm probably just going to find something about August that I'm settled in and shooting well with.
Yeah. You know, they sent us some Severs a couple years back. They're pretty cool. You might check out one of those.
I like those. I would actually definitely shoot one of those.
Yeah, I got a few of them.
I I also am game to shoot pigs during the summer and next February with a bow with a different broadhead on it for sure. But
you might be trying to shoot one with a cedar arrow and a sinew string, I think, right?
I have been trying to do some. I was been shooting my recurve and it exploded on me.
It did.
So that was sad, but I'm thinking about getting another cheap one. One of our friends of a friend, and our friend is Brian Koch, one of his friends that we kind of know now. He's showed me a pretty cool bow yesterday. It was $199.
That we both should get?
We both should get.
Okay.
And he shot a group about 3 inches or a little less.
That's cool.
15 yards with it yesterday.
Nice.
So he's pretty pumped.
I've got one, but it's like long and really heavy draw, and you and I both are like, man, I ain't messing around with that.
Yeah, we're trying to both. I'm going down from mine, and I think you are too. So
yeah,
but yeah, I mean that's kind of what I'm looking at to improve on the archery side of things is broadhead situation. I'm gonna lighten up a little bit, and hopefully get a little bit faster bow, a little bit maybe just you know those bows when they have so much pressure on them with the string and everything over time they can do some weird things. You know, so.
I think too. In that vein, is for more a little bit more conceptual. I need to shoot a little bit more in season.
Yeah,
we started doing that some this year, and I think we shot in Kansas some on the first trip, partially because it was hot and there wasn't nothing else to do. But then, like, I still had some stints where I didn't shoot my bow for over a week.
It's so hard, dude.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is.
You're talking about like pretty much hunting most days, and when you're not, your wife has something to do for you. Or whatever.
And that's why I've and it's nice because we both have like permanent residences now. Pretty much, you're about to be there.
Depends on if all the paint melts off the wall first.
Yeah, but like you can leave your target outside. You know, it they might not last as long or whatever. But in my opinion, I leave my target out there. If I've got 2 minutes, I can send a couple arrows right quick, and just that's better than nothing, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to getting everything out and messing with it. And what I started doing was like just shooting 60 yards, and that was no warm ups, nothing, because you're not going to do that anyways with whitetail. I'm not going to shoot 60 yards at a whitetail, especially in November when I'm hunting from a tree a lot. But like, if you can, you know, do pretty good at 60 cold, then you know that at 20 you've got it, right?
Yeah.
You know, in a sense. So.
Bad thing about 60, if you only have 2 minutes, is you got to walk all the way down there and back.
That's right. I'm a one-arrow type guy most of the time, too. But what I usually do when I'm shooting 60 is I'll shoot a broadhead first, and I'll shoot a field point second.
Mm-hmm.
Because that field point has a really low chance of ruining your other arrow.
Yeah, and also, at 60 versus 20, you have a lot less chance of ruining your other arrow.
You do. I still shoot separate dots. Not that I'm that good, but like...
Oh, I do too. Yeah. If I'm pretty much shooting separate dots most of the time. Unless a lot of times at 60, and I'm not as good a shot as you. I'll shoot, you know, dead center.
You're not as good a yard shot as me, but when it comes to deer, it's not quite the same. It's
it definitely is.
Don't
tougher.
Feel bad about yourself, guys, if your buddy can outshoot you shooting the foam at the house, because that ain't nothing. All right,
it's a different situation, man. Your eyes get a little, your pupils get a little more wide when you got a deer in front of you.
That's right, man. That is right. Well, that's about all I have archery-wise, I think. There is some other stuff, though, that like I really want to improve on, and we've talked about it a lot. But one of the ones for me is, and this is for us, too, is we're going to improve our abilities to access some things. We've done some kayak stuff in the past, but I think we're going to get a little bit creative this year. Going to get some hip waders. Maybe even some inflatable rafts. I've got Tyler has a little old boat motor, and I have a 10-foot John boat that just doesn't quite cut it. So I think maybe might try to get something a little bit better that way for some of the stuff. If we ever decide to go hunt on a lake or something, we'll be able to, or a river, we'll be able to zip around a little bit with that. I also would like to... not be like weird about it, because people get crazy about this stuff, man.
Yeah.
Like this tricking out their vehicles and stuff, you know. And honestly, you know, if you got time for it, then whatever floats your boat. But
I don't.
It's not worth like investing a ton of money into like the ultimate hunting bike if you don't have a ton of money. You know what I mean? But I have a old Junker mountain bike thing that doesn't even have shocks on it. that I used a little bit last year for some stuff, and I would like to maybe rig that thing where it'll at least hold my bow or something. That way I don't have to try to just do you remember Mortal Kombat, that guy had four arms instead of two? That'd be real handy for just a little bit when it comes to bicycling with archery equipment. So that's something, just the access vehicles might be something that we kind of improve on somewhat.
For sure. I mean, that's going to help us, not necessarily in being creative as much as just what we kind of need, like a necessity sometimes.
Yeah, especially it's when, like, you go out of state. Yeah. You know?
Like, there was a place we wanted to hunt last year. We couldn't get across a river.
Yeah.
And we were like, man, wish we had a boat, but we don't have that kind of money. So but, you know, the thing is, we could, and we could, and we're probably going to try to buy maybe a couple of inflatable boats or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
One for me, one for the deer, pretty much. You know?
One thing that you did really well last year was, made a really cool feeder pin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I need to improve on. Of course, not for public land purposes, because you'd be real dumb to build a feeder pin on public land, first of all, because it's illegal.
Somebody's probably done it.
So I've seen, I have seen feeder pins that one of the sides is the fence to public land for sure. I need to build that on my own personal property, because you and I were discussing this the other day. I had a corn feeder that was right on the edge of the timber, and I thought that was a real cool idea until I actually tried to hunt it and then realized, like, deer were just ducking in and out of the timber a whole lot and not really giving me shot opportunities or giving me good, at least, hunting winds and places to hunt. So I'm going to take a page from your book and sneeze real big in a second. I think it's going to go away. Okay, but I'm going to build one of your feeder pins on my property, and we'll probably film that and kind of show that a little bit. If you're from Texas and have hunted the Texas way a whole lot, you're probably like, guys, that's like, you know, I learned how to do that when I was six, you know. But like, if you're not, it's a pretty good tactic, because you actually didn't put a feeder in it. You just put corn piles in there, kind of did the Kansas thing.
I just hand fed pretty much the whole year. I would just, I mean, because it's right next to where I'm at every day, so I just drive to the back, put some corn in it. I didn't even do the pile thing really, but one time I put like 10 bags in there one time when I was gonna, I think it was when early November when we were gonna be gone. That was the only time I ever did the pile thing really. But yeah, I mean, it's big though. I don't know if you mentioned that, but it's not like a normal feeder pen like guys make. It's big. It gives a lot of space to a deer so that it doesn't feel uncomfortable,
and the whole purpose is to exclude the piggies. That's our problem, is that where we live, when there's corn on the ground, hogs just destroy it. And
run the deer
if you
off.
Like to shoot whatever, it's not a bad thing, because you get pigs to shoot at, you know. But for us, I get to shoot plenty of pigs when it's not deer season. So when it is deer season, I'm trying to make sure I can do everything to do that. So that's kind of my property improvement stuff. I don't have a ton. I mean, we already kind of did the visual barrier stuff and whatnot, and we kind of recorded some of that video. But do you have any other property stuff that you're gonna mess with?
I'm gonna try to get a kind of permanent cheap aluminum stand probably up, in a tree that I like, and maybe two trees. That way I don't have to worry about hanging and hunting, I mean, and where my steps are when I want to go somewhere else or whatever. And then probably I don't know. That's probably all I'm going to be able to really feasibly do this year too much. I would like to get a ground blind out that Jet can shoot out of, maybe. But that's about it on that side of things, you know. Like, and the other thing, you know, this is definitely a public land thing, but one thing I was thinking that could help us out possibly would be having, like, a deer sled.
Oh, yeah? That's cool.
Yeah, because there's some situations where the deer cart is actually kind of difficult. Not that there's a different – not that, like, dragging the deer is better, but I kind of feel like a sled that you could put it on and slide across the tops of stuff, or, you know, across hills or whatever. When you're hunting in pig country, you got these big old, like, wallers and stuff that you got to drive this cart through, you know. And I think a sled would probably handle that a little bit better, maybe.
And if you're, like, you know, deer carts work real good in, like, big wood stuff where there's not tall grass. But if you shoot a deer and it runs off and ends up back in the CRP field or something, like, deer carts are tough in that. And a sled over dry grass is, like, no friction mm-hmm. and real smooth. So it's a good option for sure. Yeah. I didn't even think about that, man. That's cool.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, you could make that pretty cheap. So. Yeah. Another thing that we're going to employ this year on both the private and the public are cell cams.
Yeah.
So we've been talking mm-hmm. about that quite a bit. You made a pretty good point about what that's going to help us do.
Yeah, so we're going to run a bunch of Moultrie Deltas, which they just came out with. They're $99. They're, you know, supposed to be pretty bad at the bone, and ours are on the way right now. And I think they're going to hit my porch while we're on vacation. So if Ooh. Any of you steal them, I will hunt you down. Actually going to get somebody to go over there and pick them up.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to get those out pretty soon and start playing with them, messing around, make sure we understand them because we want to make sure we're familiar with them come deer season. But cell cams have a unique place. I mean, I'm still going to run regular trail cameras some because, honestly, they're just less of a hassle to in some senses. But at the same time, you have to go pull them and check them. And that's the beauty of a cell cam, right? Of course, you don't have to go pull the cord.
Mm-hmm.
And what that's going to help us with is that whenever we're gone on these trips, okay, we don't have really a lot of time when we come home to Texas to go run around and check trail cameras and see who's what, when, and where. Whereas whenever you're in a cell cam, say you're a guy who goes out of town or maybe you have a place that you go travel to hunt and or at least you just don't want to booger it up or whatever it is, you can come home, say for 4 days, look at your cell camera information and then be able to make good moves and not have to go in and go 4 places, spend half a day pulling cards and risk spooking deer when you do that.
And another reason why that's so important is a lot of times we are traveling the first part of November out of state to hunt because it's still pretty hot back home and the rut is kicking in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we come back, like it's time in mm-hmm. in East Texas especially, but a lot of parts of Texas are that mid-November to late November is when things are, you know, deer are really traveling. We've seen around the 14th been a good day. And so, like, you know, you come back and you need to figure out something quick. You know, like you may have a day off where you need to take care of some business or whatever, and then it's like time to hunt again. And so, you know, if you were taking care of house business and taxes and whatever else you needed to take care of, you didn't get to check cameras, and now mm-hmm. you're going to be hunting the next morning, and you have no clue what to do. And so yeah. the cell cams can really help you out there. So, mm-hmm. yeah, that's another thing that's going to be helpful for us. You know, for me, that kind of sums up a lot of what I'm looking to do. It's the bow setup with the arrows, the rangefinder, focusing on better shots, sled, a little bit of habitat stuff, permanent stands, and then all that camera stuff we mentioned at the beginning. Mm-hmm. You got anything else you've been kind of looking at?
No, that really kind of wraps it up for me, too. I mean, you kind of hit it on the nail on the head. Of course, there's like some really big things, and there's some minor stuff that would either just make our lives easier or just make it to where we can do a better job of telling the story and showing hunts to y'all, you know. So mm-hmm. if you are the kind of person who watches YouTube, be sure and subscribe if you haven't. If you have, we really, really appreciate the support, guys, because we really, this not that we don't, but this year we're working real hard to make sure we provide you with something that can, you know, bring a little joy to your life.
Yeah.
We by no means are knocking it in the head when it comes to, you know, making tons of money at this or whatever, but God has blessed us and given us some opportunities to, I guess, have a little bit more liberty mm-hmm. with doing some things, and I'm excited about it. That just means that 2021 is going to be so bad to the bone. Yeah. We actually, I'm not going to tell you all the number, but we did the calculations of if everything goes good. No, actually, we did the calculations of what we thought would happen for how many bucks hit the ground. I'm not going to tell you all the number.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of deer. Because, honestly, one of the cool things about what we get to do is, you know, we're going to work with a couple more guys. Like, what, Hunter, Chris, and Eric are going to be kind of our auxiliary crew, right? And mm-hmm. so, with the five of us between us, there's a lot of tags, right? Like, mm-hmm. of course, Tyler and I, since we, you know, built this thing and have been doing this for a while, we're going to do a lot of hunting. But those guys are going to do some hunting, too. And between all of us, man, there's some good opportunity going down right yep. here, man.
So I'm excited.
Oh, we're so close. Let's go use this wedding to learn how to run this new camera.
For real.
And then we'll be ready to rock and roll for the fall. Does that sound good to you?
It sounds good to me, man. We're going to make some timeless hunting videos this year, and it's going to be awesome, man. I cannot wait. Yeah. So.
Sweet. Well, y'all, remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.